supporting WHYY Penn Medicine, helping to find new cures for cancer. With life-saving clinical trials and advanced surgical techniques, Penn Medicine is offering more hope for patients everywhere. Learn more at PennMedicine.org/cancer. Penn Medicine, what's next?
Voices in the Family is made possible in part by the generous support of Devereaux, the nation's largest nonprofit provider of behavioral health care for children, adolescents, and adults with developmental and intellectual disabilities, behavioral disorders, and mental illness. Devereaux operates at 15 centers in 11 states throughout the country.
I'm Dan Gottlieb. Thanks for listening to WHYY and Voices in the Family. Imagine your child being separated from you for 6 months, 6 years, or for their entire childhood. What would life be like for them in the care of others because you couldn't take care of them? What is this thing called foster care? Many children entering the system, of course, experience the hardship of parental rejection. Later, many foster kids talk about shame and isolation. Sometimes there's a lack of basic nurturing, even kindness. Often there's abuse. But moreover, what happens when our foster kids enter young adulthood, when they so-called age out of the system and turn 18? The search for love and acceptance, the need for wholeness, doesn't stop there. On today's show, we're going to be talking about caring for foster kids with an emphasis on the ones who age out of the system. We've got four guests today: Sharon McGinley, Tiara Parks, Irene Clements, and Phyllis Mundy. Sharon McGinley is the founder of Eddie's House, a resource center in Philadelphia for young adults leaving the foster care system. She joins us here in the studio. Sharon, hi. Thanks for joining us.
Thanks for having me.
Thanks for the work you do.
My pleasure.
Tiara Parks has aged out of the foster care system. She's receiving support from Eddie's House as she prepares to go to college. And she's also here in the studio with us. Tiara, hi.
Hello.
Thanks for coming down.
You're welcome.
On the telephone is Irene Clements. She's president of the National Foster Parent Association. She joins us by phone from Texas. Irene, hi.
Hi. Welcome. How are you?
Welcome to the show. I'm good. Thank you. And Phyllis Mundy. She's a Pennsylvania state representative from Luzerne County, and she's also joining us by phone. Phyllis Mundy, welcome to the show.
Thank you. Glad to be here.
Well, if you've got a idea, comment, experience with foster care, we'd love to hear from you. Our number is 888-477-9499. Again, that's 888-477-9499. I mean, let's start with you.
Okay.
We know here in Philadelphia we've got 10,000 foster kids. Nationally, there's more than 400,000. How do these kids get into the system in the first place?
They come in because of abuse and neglect allegations that are investigated by the various state agencies that are charged with that. And when severe abuse and neglect has been confirmed and there hasn't been a family member or a close relative or a fictive kin person available who the investigating agency feels could keep the children safe, they come into what we are calling stranger foster care.
So how long do they stay in the system?
The federal government passed some laws quite a number of years ago now that require a permanency plan to be established by 12 months. And then there is a possible 6-month extension after that if the court feels that the parent or parents are doing significant work on their plan in order to get their kids returned. So there is a timeline to the permanency plan. Then, of course, that permanency plan has to be achieved, and that's what winds up keeping kids in foster care for longer periods of time, oftentimes.
From your description, Irene, when we talked about how kids get into foster care, all of the options you described include trauma, so that
yes.
every child in foster care has experienced trauma.
To some extent, yes, and some more than others, of course. And just the whole removing a child from what's familiar to them, even though it's maybe dangerous and abusive, to the complete unknown is trauma in itself.
Mm. Sharon, we did a show on foster care about 5-6 years ago. We learned that sometimes the goal is reunification with parent. You know, Irene touched on this a little bit. And sometimes it's not the goal. So let's talk about the children where that's not the goal, where they'll probably be in the foster care system most of their lives, yes?
Yes.
What are their lives like?
Moved from home to home. They feel like they've been thrown away endlessly. When I get them, that's what their life has been. So most of the young people that I work with have been in foster care almost their entire life. And they get to be broken. Their spirit is really damaged. And I'm lucky I get the cream of the crop because they get to me. They haven't already gone down sort of the drug and alcohol road, or, you know, they still want to try. So there's still a spark there. But they are so damaged.
If I can get personal here, Sharon, when I asked you that question, when I said, what are their lives like, you closed your eyes and you took a breath. What happened to you?
Me personally?
No, yeah, just at that moment when I asked the question.
I thought of all the stories. I think of Tierra sitting next to me. I think of Eddie, who the organization is named after, and I just want to cry. I just want to cry. What happens to them, it's you can't imagine. You don't want to imagine.
Well, the latter might not be true. Let's see if Tiara can help us. Tiara, you've been in foster care since you were 2 years old.
Yes.
How did you get there?
My mother was on drugs. She had, at the time, she had me, my sister, and it was another infant. And the infant skull got crushed in. So DHS wanted her, believed that the man she was dating did it, so they wanted her to stay away from him. But she was on drugs at the time, and she didn't want to stay away from them, so they removed us from the house. It wasn't a good living situation. Like I said, she was on drugs, so it wasn't like food. It wasn't being properly taken care of. So they took me at 2, and they took my sister. She was 4.
Different foster homes?
We tried to stay together, and then we were in a... Our aunt had adopted us. Our blood aunt had adopted us, and she was abusive. So my sister ran away at 14, leaving me behind 3 years. So I stayed there for 3 more years, and then I finally got enough information, enough knowledge to run away to. So we got separated for 3 years, but we were together before.
How old were you when you ran away from your aunt's house?
I believe 14, too.
And what was she doing to you?
It was abuse. She would call me ugly. She would say, you black. She would watch me in bleach because she didn't like my skin color because, you know, I'm chocolate. And she is, too. She was darker than me, but she just had a lot of anger. And so she would beat us with broomsticks. She would, before she used to put, like, the cuts, she used to put salt on me. And, you know, to make it hurt. But when you go to school, teachers start to ask questions. So she started using bleach. And she was also on drugs. So it was a lot of traffic running into the house. So there was a lot of men there. And she really didn't pay attention. The only attention we got was bad attention from us. You know, she didn't. She was given money by DHS to take care of us, but she never did. So I had to go and get my own stuff. Like, I was sleeping on an air mattress. You know, I used to go to the store, and I didn't have money, so I used to, you know, steal, like, underwears and stuff from the store and stuff that I needed to take care of me. So,
what's this like, telling the story now?
Right now, it's better because in Eddie's house, I had a lot of, you know, people talk to me, so now it's easy for me to talk to it, but it still talk about it, but it still hurts.
You still feel pain.
Exactly, yeah, because I was a child. I was innocent, and I had no one to fight for you. You have, when you in foster care, you lose your adult, you lose your parent. So, you know, you have no one to say, hey, stop hurting that child. You have no one to defend for you, you know? So you just a child defending for yourself, and it's not good because you don't know a lot. So it hurt. It hurts a lot. And you kind of just, as a child, kind of ask why a lot because you don't understand what's going on. Like, I didn't know why she didn't like me. I just know she didn't.
Do you still ask why?
No. I kind of understand why now. Something just wasn't right with her. You know, it wasn't me at all because I was a child. What could I be doing for her not to like me that much?
Yeah, you couldn't have known that when you were a child.
No, you didn't, because I used to try to do things to get her to like me. Like, you know, I was always a straight-A student. I would, you know, walk on eggshells around her.
How many foster care homes were you in?
Over a dozen.
How did that happen?
Well, okay, it's like this. Well, like I said, DHS offers money for when you take in a foster child. Most people just take them in for the money when they get enough amount of money that they need, they send you back, you know, and most of the time they run out of homes, so you go to group homes. So a lot of kids go to group homes, and where it's a whole lot of foster kids, and we just stay in this one building. And then when you lucky to find a home, more than likely it's just for money. They don't really care. Or you in a situation where someone thinks that if they get this child, you know, they broken, and then when they come in the house, they think that over a day they gonna be loving, and I'm gonna just show them some love, and then everything's gonna be fine and great. But you are hurt. By the time you get into, like, maybe my sixth foster care, I just stopped trusting people, you know. So it wasn't easy, you know. There's a lot of people, as soon as you go in, you know, a foster home, the first thing they say is, you can call me mom, or this is your home, welcome to your new home. But as a child, you're thinking that's what they all said, and you just wondering how long you got here.
And you said, which is typical of a lot of foster kids, there was also sexual abuse in some
yes.
of these homes.
Yes, that's true. Not so much in the placements or a lot of the foster homes that I went to, but it was mainly happened at my aunt's house. It was, you know, it was family who did it, which hurt more, you know. So, like I said, it was a lot of traffic running into her house. So, you know, men would touch you and stuff like that. And, you know.
I've got an impossible question. What was it like living inside your skin during your childhood?
I hated it. I hated everything about me because I hated myself. You start to hate. As a kid, you know, I didn't know what she was doing. Like, I thought, again, like, she has to like me. Like, what am I doing wrong? So as a kid, you don't have no knowledge, or you don't have anyone telling you, you know, she's doing this because she's not right with herself. So I started hating myself. So I'm starting to think, okay, it has to be me. And it's me. This is the reason why I'm going through all this, because the way I am and the way I look, and I just hated me.
There was a book written many years ago by when we first started studying trauma. and the book was titled, and they studied a group of kids who had been hijacked, their school bus, elementary school bus had been hijacked and buried underground. And this woman studied these children. But the title of the book was Too Scared to Cry. And I was thinking about that as I was listening to you in your childhood, that you hated. And I wonder if that was a way to protect yourself from crying, from feeling all the pain and fear.
Oh, but I did cry. I did cry. I cried a lot. It's taking me a lot not to cry right now, because you just get told a lot of things. Like, I didn't know, and as a child, you don't understand why these people are being mean. So you're telling you, you know, you're ugly and you're never going to make it, and you're going to be this and you're never going to be stuff, and just all the abuse mentally and physically. I cried a lot. It's like no one heard me, though.
Let's bring on State Representative Phyllis Mundy. here. Phyllis, how could this happen?
Well, I'm not sure why it happens. You know, any time an institutional setting is involved, whether and settings run by bureaucracies, there is a lack of personalization. Having to seek out foster care for children is, I'm sure, not an easy thing. I'm sure that when potential foster care families are vetted by the agency, you know, they put their best foot forward, and we're in such desperate need of foster families that I'm sure a lot of foster families who are just in it for the money slip through the cracks. I'm sure that's never the intention, but that sort of, you know, listening to Tiara brings back memories of the testimony I heard back in 2002 after the Joint State Government Commission issued a report on foster care and just basically said that we need to do better. And then we took the report and held public hearings on it, and children like TR came forward and offered their experiences in much the same way. And I was just determined then that we must do better. It's absolutely unacceptable to take responsibility for these children and do such a bad job of it. If even one child experiences life the way Tiara did, that's too many. But to know that so many children in foster care are ill-treated, they don't get the services that they need and are actually in law and regulation for them, that was really the impetus for my bill.
I want to talk about the bill. I want to talk about foster parents, and I want to talk about more about Tiara and her history, but I've got to be brutally honest here. I need to take a break. I have been listening to you, Phyllis, and at the same time I'm watching Tiara across from me and Sharon, and watching them react to the story that that Tiara just told, and she's got tears streaming down her cheeks, and so does Sharon. And if I wasn't doing radio, I would. And I, at this moment, I personally need a 60-second break to begin to digest the amount of suffering that's going on in the studio and that goes on in all of our communities. So with your permission, we'll be back in just 60 short seconds. We are talking about the foster system, what it does, moreover, what it doesn't do, how children get injured and what happens to them, these injured children, when they're 18 years old and the system stops and they come out with no tools. My guests are Tiara Parks, who we just heard from. She's aged out of the foster care system. She's receiving support from Eddie's House. We're going to hear a lot more about that this afternoon as she prepares to go to college. We've heard just some of her very eloquent an impassioned story. We heard earlier from Sharon McGinley. We'll hear more about her afterwards. She's the founder of Eddie's House. We just heard from Pennsylvania State Representative Phyllis Mundy from Luzerne County. She introduced some very important legislation that I think either has been signed into law or is about to be signed into law by Governor Rendell. And on the phone with me is Irene Clements. She's president of the National Foster Parent Association. Well, I'm Dan Gottlieb. You're listening to Voices in the Family. It's right here on WHYY FM.
WHYY is supported by the Cooper Bone and Joint Institute, managing severe orthopedic injury and disease. Their joint replacement program has received the Blue Distinction Award for excellence and quality care. Whether due to arthritis or a severe injury, Cooper physicians precisely align your hip, knee, or shoulder replacement. Tough injuries, skilled physicians. Cooper Bone and Joint Institute. Locations in South Jersey and Newtown Square. CooperHealth.org/numbers or 800-8-COOPER.
Before it was understood as PTSD, soldiers traumatized in war were described as shell-shocked or battle-fatigued. It was something no soldier wanted to own up to.
You were a coward. You were a malingerer. You were somebody that was making it up.
On the next Fresh Air, we talk with Ellen Gusenberg and John Alpert, directors of the new HBO documentary, War Torn, 1861 to 2010. Join us.
This afternoon at 3 and again tonight at 7 on WHYY.
We're back on Voices in the Family. We are talking about the very moving, powerful, and important story of foster care, and specifically, what happens when children who are already wounded by foster care, what happens to them when they turn 18 and age out of the system? My guests are Sharon McGinley. She's the founder of Eddie's House. This is a resource in Philadelphia for children who do age out of the system. Tierra Parks aged out of foster care. We heard from her earlier. We'll hear more again. She's receiving support from Eddie's House. She's on her way to college soon, I hope. Phyllis Mundy's on the phone. She's a Pennsylvania State Representative from Luzerne County. And Irene Clements is President of the National Foster Parent Association. Our number is 888-477-9499. Again, that's 888-477-9499. If you are a foster parent or working in the foster care system or you are in foster care or aged out of foster care, we'd love to hear from you. Again, that's 888-477-9499. I want to get back to you, Phyllis Mundy. Tell us about the legislation you introduced.
Well, it's House Bill 2338, the Children in Foster Care Act. And as you said, it's currently waiting to be signed by the Senate President Pro Tem, and then it would go to the governor's desk.
It passed the Senate?
Yes.
Okay.
He just hasn't signed it yet.
Okay.
And the bill itself basically enumerates the protections and opportunities that should be afforded to children in foster care. It sort of puts in one place current law and regulation that is kind of spread out throughout regulations and law so that families, foster families who are interested in better advocating for their foster children and foster children themselves who are obviously old enough to understand and to advocate on their own behalf can do a better job of that given this information. As I said, I introduced the bill in response to a joint state government commission study that was done. And so there, it basically lays out for foster families and foster children what protections are in law and regulation, and such as being allowed to keep in touch with siblings, that the priority should be to put them with family members as opposed to non-family members, as opposed, you know, as opposed to putting them with strangers.
What other rights do they have? If you could just give us the cliff notes.
Well, there are a lot of rights that they have, but this really clarifies and puts in one place. So the notion that you should be able to stay in the school district that you began with, you know, so that you're not I mean, it's hard enough to change foster families, but to also change school districts or school buildings over and over again is very disruptive to not only to your education, but to your...
Let me interrupt you right there.
Sure.
I'm curious about something. I wish you could be in the studio with me. Actually, I wish the whole audience could. So you're talking about disrupting education, staying in the same system, and I'm watching Tierra and Sharon both nod their heads. So tell me, Tierra, your reaction. Obviously, you didn't stay in the school same system.
No. I didn't stay in the same school. I think I went to maybe over 6 different high schools. For one high school, I was only there for a day, you know?
So you were nodding your head. What would that have meant to you if you had stayed?
It would have meant a lot because, you know, it's hard. Like she said, it is hard changing foster family, but to change schools and, you know, to realize that you're not going to be there at school doesn't, you don't pay attention to it anymore. You stop, you know, liking it. You stop wanting to go. Who wants to be the new person every 3 months, you know?
Sharon, what's your reaction to this legislation and does it go far enough?
I think it's a wonderful beginning, a wonderful beginning. And it's a beginning of a conversation that we need to have about the system that isn't really working. And Representative Mundy was wonderful. I was there. Eddie was actually one of the people that testified. And it was so important to him that this Bill of Rights went through. And actually, he died before this passed. And he would have really, it would have meant a lot to him.
Phyllis Mundy, tell us, if you were governor, and if you had the Speaker of the House and the President of the Senate, if you had their ear and their respect, what would this legislation look like?
Well, it would look like what it looks like now. We worked very hard over two sessions to do the best we could. We had to make it revenue neutral. There are items that I included the first time I introduced it that clearly killed the bill the first session, and that I had to take out in order to get it passed this session, and that was freedom from discrimination on the basis of race, gender, religion, and sexual orientation. And sexual orientation obviously was very controversial to the point where those who were opposed to that killed the bill. So this time I had to introduce it without the discrimination issues.
Well, let me ask you probably a question no politician gets asked. Forget about revenue neutral. Forget about it. Let's say you've got the pockets you need. What do we need? What does the legislature need to do? Forget about money.
Well, unfortunately, that's just not the reality. But if I ruled the world,
our children
are the most important thing, not only because it's the right thing to do, but because it's the future of our Commonwealth, it's the future of our country. We don't have a single child to let fail. And my goal as a state representative for the last 20 years has been to make sure that our children succeed. Not only do they get the best possible start in life through early childhood intervention and education, but when they are put in situations like foster children are, that we do our absolute best to make sure that they get what they need to be successful. And, you know, Tiara came into the system already with issues related to her family that were difficult for her to deal with. She should not have had to go through what she went through. I would make sure that if I ruled the world and didn't have to worry about the financial implications, I would make sure that every single caseworker had the time and the resources necessary to make sure that these kids get what they need. And if that means, you know, when a child is first placed, going back to visit once a week or twice a week to make sure that it's an appropriate setting, then that should happen. Children should not have to change schools. Obviously, in the past, I'm sure, as Sharon can tell you, we have not been very diligent about making sure that we find family members who would be willing to care for these kids. Now, obviously, Tiara's situation was unfortunate in that her aunt was not an appropriate caregiver. But for many children, that would be a preferable placement.
Well, you know, as I listen to you and I listen to your thinking, I just want you to know that if you did decide to rule the world, I would offer the first contribution.
Well, thank you.
I would wish that for you. I want to turn for a minute before we go to our callers to Irene. And we've been hearing a lot of negative things about the foster care system, but Irene, you're president of the National Foster Parent Association. Certainly not all foster parents go into this to seek a profit.
That's so very true, and it breaks my heart when I hear youth talk about the bad experiences they had in foster care. The nature of foster care is changing, and it has to change. The representative is so correct that we need to find appropriate family members first, if we possibly can. And if we can't find them first, then we need to keep looking for them, because that's usually what's best for kids. But they have to, again, those families have to be vetted, and they have to be safe people for these children. The other thing is that when agencies screen and then study and then license a foster family, and they train them, each state is very different in how they do that and what the expectations are up front and then what the expectations are after placement of children. And it behooves every agency that does that work to be very diligent in how they monitor each family that they have licensed that they place children in to make sure that those families are there for the best interest of the children and not their own best interest.
I guess Phyllis and Sharon, too, we've already established that children going into foster care, almost all children going into foster care, have been traumatized, have been wounded in some way, shape, or form. Is there any way where these, any state where these foster parents or prospective foster parents are being trained to help children heal from wounds?
Well, actually, it is becoming more of a national trend for trauma-informed care to be a very active part of the child welfare system, because it's not just the foster parents who have to understand trauma-informed care, but their caseworkers, their therapists, and even the school personnel, because it's a whole new way and a whole different way of looking at kids, because trauma in most kids comes out in behaviors that are unacceptable to, right, to many people. And there are ways within the trauma-informed care system to address those issues with youth and help them understand the trauma and where it came from, where those behaviors really can be adjusted and eliminated fairly easily and fairly quickly, depending on the amount of trauma.
Level of trauma and of course, genetics and other support.
In Texas, we currently have a law that says that everybody that works in the child welfare system has to have at least an overview of trauma-informed care. And we have a bill that's being written right now for inclusion in our next legislative session that says that that has to be a minimum of 15 hours for each person within the system itself.
That's wonderful.
So that there's a better understanding of everybody who touches these youth. It will go a long way.
Some agencies are
already doing it on their own because it's the right thing to do.
Yeah, it sure sounds like it is. It sounds wonderful. Tiara, you had a comment?
Yeah, a lot of the... To pick a foster parent now in Philadelphia, they just go in the house. They make sure the water is running. You can flush the toilet. You know, they make sure you got somewhere for you to sleep with the kid. And if you do, more than likely you pass and they give you this child. Now, they don't ask. They don't really, the foster parents, they don't really take and, like, get to know them, which was the problem. Like, you know, I think it should be some kind of way where you actually should sit down and, like, have, like, even a therapist, you know, examine the foster parents on why you want to become one, why do you think this child will work, instead of saying, okay, you have enough room, you got running in hot water, so we're going to put this child with you.
I've got, just briefly, Phyllis Mundy, and I know you have to go. You know, I mentioned earlier, I know you're not in Philadelphia, but we've got 10,000 foster care kids here.
Apparently there are about 31,000 statewide.
Okay. So, you know, as essential as good foster care is, technically it's an entitlement program. And in this political climate, entitlement programs are the boogeyman.
Mm-hmm.
So funding, are things going to get worse? I mean, this what Tiara just described is, you know, I'm assuming it's just not people.
It's unacceptable. It's unacceptable. When it comes to our children, we need to do what we need to do to make sure they get the best possible start in life. You know, and this is an economic reality. Senior citizens are going to rely on these children for goods and services and to pay for Social Security and Medicare. Our society relies on the productivity of our citizens. And when you cause 31,000 children to begin in this unacceptable fashion, you are dooming our economy in the future. And it's simply unacceptable to me. And I will do everything in my power to make sure that we give funding for the children and youth agencies and foster care the most funding that we can. But you're right. We have a governor coming in who's vowed to not raise taxes in this very difficult economic climate, and apparently the people of Pennsylvania have said that that's a good thing. They elected him. Many state representatives have been elected on that basis, that they will cut taxes, in fact.
Yeah,
well, you know, given our current fiscal situation, that can only mean one thing, that government services, this included, will receive cuts. And we're already not doing a good enough job.
Yeah. Well, we've only got a couple more minutes with you and Irene Clements. And we've got someone on the phone who's got a question that might be of interest to Irene. Let's go to Chris on line two. Chris?
Oh, hello?
Yes.
Hi. This just makes me very sad. It's been ongoing for so long. Many years ago, we were foster parents, and we had older children. We just had one at a time. And I'm thinking of Terry, who was 17 when we got him. And we had a little farm, and we had him help us work. And we got his GED, helped him get his GED, and we helped him get a job, and we helped him get an old car. Well, but the trouble was when he turned 18, there was nobody that would help us. We didn't need a lot of money, but we needed some support to keep him. We were willing to let him live with us for free, but we needed some help from an agency or something. And there was nothing. It was just all on us.
Well, Chris,
our expenses. And let me just get to the punchline. We tried our best, and the last time we saw him, we finally had to let him go and tried to find. He ended up going to what they called the county home. I knew of Terry. He was in prison for having stolen a pack of cigarettes.
Yeah, this is heartbreaking. Well, Chris, you know, nothing can change what happened to you, but you've called the right show at the right time. Sharon, I'd like to hear you react to what you heard.
The finances is a very important part. It would be great, though, if we could talk about what the kids really need and what Chris was offering to Terry, which was love and caring. And these kids, that's what they need, and it would be, the fiscal part is important, but every time you start to talk to politicians about trying to make any changes, there's a wall there because they say it's going to cost more money. I would really like to have conversations about how we don't have to make it cost more money. Let's be more efficient. But what I have found with Eddie's house is that when these young people have the support of each other, so if you take like a cancer support group or AA, that there is no expense to that. Give them a chance to have each other. None of these kids have any friends because they're moved from from high school to high school. So there's no friends here. There's no family, no friends, and they're put on the street.
Well, that is a perfect segue, young lady, to what we're going to talk about after we take this break. I want to talk about what happened to you, Tiara, after you aged out, and how you found Eddie's house and the kind of work you're doing. Unfortunately, we've got to say goodbye to Irene Clements and Phyllis Mundy. Irene is president of the National Foster Parent Association. Irene Clements, thanks so much for joining us.
You're very welcome. Thank you for the opportunity.
Phyllis Mundy is a Pennsylvania state representative from Luzerne County. Phyllis Mundy, thank you.
Thank you, Dan.
And thank you. Thank you for the work you're doing. And we are still going to be joined by Sharon McGinley, founder of Eddie's House, Tiara Parks. She aged out of the foster system and receiving support from Eddie's House as she prepares to go to college. Well, I'm Dan Gottlieb. You're listening to Voices in the Family. It's right here on WHYY FM.
Penn Medicine supports WHYY. Doctors at Penn's Depression Research Unit have been studying the causes and treatment of mood disorders since 1964 and are currently performing research to develop improved treatments. Symptoms may include mood swings, low energy, and low motivation. Initial evaluations are offered to determine those who are eligible for treatment. More about Penn's Depression Research Unit at 215-662-3462. 215-662-3462.
Politics, family, finance, faith. Too often the conversations are limited to who we know. But in our fast-paced world, it's important to know the new faces at the table and the new ideas that could shape our lives. Whether it's immigration, politics, or parenting, we offer real conversation about real issues. Join us as we explore what's beyond the headlines on Tell Me More.
This afternoon at 1 on WHYY.
We are back on Voices in the Family. I'm Dan Gottlieb, your host. We're talking about foster care, what happens, what's broken, and why. Now we're going to be talking about what needs to be done, and especially what needs to be done for kids who so-called age out of the system, who turn 18, and everything seems to fall away. Tiara, let's start with you again. Tell us, if you can recall, the day you aged out of the system?
Well, the day you age out is March 31st, which is my birthday when I turned 18. but the day I remember getting a letter, they had moved me to, because the placements were full and there were, and I was 17, about to be 18 at the time. So not really a lot of foster parents, you know, wanted me. You know, they want the puppies, the small kids, and then the big ones are too much. So I was staying in a shelter, actually called the Covenant House. And I went and visit my aunt's house, and that's where they were sending my mail to. And so they sent me a letter saying that I had aged out of foster care and I can get something called a board extension, but I would have to fill out paperwork and stuff like that. But to me, back then, foster care wasn't doing that much anyway, so I didn't care, but I didn't know how to do anything. I didn't know how to get a job. My insurance stopped after that and everything.
So what happened after that?
After that, you got to start making a way by yourself. I had left the shelter, and I started living with my Aunt Trudy, who, again, not going to get in too deep with that, but I started living with my Aunt Trudy and I had to get my own stuff. So I didn't know anything about when I would think to myself, I have to go get a job. The first thing I would think, because I wasn't taught any different, like, oh God, I got to go work at McDonald's. Who wants to do that? You know? And I didn't know how to really fill out an application. I didn't know what the heck a resume was. And
You're smiling.
Because it's just so funny back then. Like, the little things that you don't know about, like, seem so big.
Yeah,
like,
it's
funny now that, like, because I know I can write, I got, like, 3 different resumes. But back then, I didn't know what it was. And back then, and it was so hard. It was so hard, it seemed like it was the end of the world. But, like, once you learn and, like if I just had somebody to teach me, my life could have been so much different. So I'm smiling at how easy it was. It's just I didn't look at I just didn't know. I just didn't know how to do it. I could have did it, but I just didn't know because no one taught me.
So you were angry?
Yeah, of course. I was angry way before I hit 18. I was angry, I think, about 16, once I realized that they were human. And, you know, I had let people do a lot of things to me. Like, a lot of foster kids, they think are bad because we have such an anger problem. And, you know, how we just have this nonchalant, you know, thing about us. But it's not that. It's just once you realize you can do it for yourself and, you know, you, even if it's the wrong way, even if it's like most kids turn wind up selling drugs, then they wind up going to jail, you know, but you got to.
Did you?
Yes, I did. I wound up going to jail. I didn't sell drugs, but, you know, I did things that was against the law. And I was getting in the fights and I was just mad. I was mad and I just promised myself that I would never let anybody, you know, hurt me the way I did when I was a child. So I would get in a fight with teachers. I would mostly adults because it was like adults were the enemies.
Sure.
Yeah. So it wasn't. They look at it, if you a fighter, an adult, like you just really look bad. So,
when did you meet Sharon?
When I was in jail. I was in jail, and I have a advocate named Tracy Thomasy, who is the best. She stayed in my life even though after I had aged out of foster care. And I had, again, the street life, me trying to survive and maintain by myself, led me into jail. So I got locked up, and she told me about Eddie's house. And I wrote Sharon a letter from jail, and Sharon had one of her employees come up and actually visit me in the jail. And I'm like, oh, my goodness, like, this is a first, like. And I had talked to one of her employees, and then when I got out August 5th. And I met Sharon. We had went out to dinner, and I was just a shy person. She was a program, but being in foster care, you in a lot of programs, so you don't expect them to be different.
Wait. Go slow a little bit.
Okay.
Even though we're running out of time, okay. I want to know what's happening in your heart during this process. So, here you are, an angry young lady who's mm-hmm. in jail, who doesn't trust anybody or anything,
mm-hmm.
yet you want to survive because you write this letter to Sharon.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
All of a sudden, somebody appears in prison for you, and you said that's never happened before.
No.
So what happened to you? What was that experience? Did you start to feel some trust, some
no.
openness? Okay.
No.
Tell me when that happened.
Okay. Like it takes a while for you to start, and most people don't understand it. It takes a while for foster kids or someone in foster care who has been abandoned to trust anybody. So I was just shocked that she actually, you know, took time out to send one of her, you know, because she could have just read my letter and said, okay, well, when she get out and get home, then we're, you know, that's how most programs work.
Tell us when you first met her.
Okay, when I first met her.
I'm nagging you here because we're running out of time.
Okay. When I first met her, I was scared. I really wouldn't look her in the eye. I just thought she was just like this regular person who just, you know, just said they want to do for foster care, but they want, that's their job title. And, like, maybe after a month, like, I started to open up. I started to trust her. She invited me places to her house and everything. And, you know, she had a lot of trust in me.
What was that like for you?
I was kind of like, who is this lady? What is she doing and why is she doing it? Why is she being so nice? Why is she there for me?
Yeah. I hear all that. But meanwhile, there's a sparkle in your eye and you're smiling. I want to know what's happening inside your heart while this is going on.
She just swept me away. She just, you know, she was different. She was something. It was about time. It was about time I had somebody in my life that loved me and actually showed me the love that I needed and stuck it out with me. It was about time. Like, she was a blessing. It was a blessing to find her. She was completely different from anything that I experienced in my life. And I do trust her now. I look at her as her like a mother now. And she feels my pain. She know what it's like. She didn't judge me not one time. And she trusted me,
well,
which meant a lot.
Yeah, I got bad news for you. I've been watching her for a whole hour. I'm going to take her home with me.
No.
Hell with you. Yeah. Listen, I hate to do this to you, Sharon. We've only got a little bit of time left. You have got to tell us about Eddie's house.
Well, Tierra just explained it. What it is not judging these young people. They come angry. I mean, there was nobody angrier than Tierra. Nobody. And today, she is the sweetest. You just want to take her home with you.
What programs do you offer? How do you offer them? Where do the kids come from? Where are you located?
We have an office in Center City. And there, so I have a couple different levels of programs. So we meet regularly and have a group, and the kids all come together and we talk and share and are like one big family and cry and laugh.
How do they find you?
I don't know. They find me all different ways on YouTube. I mean, I have a website, so they can, you know, if they put in aged out foster care, I come up. Social workers will, other
Eddie's
kids
house.
In Eddie's house. Yeah.
Do you have room?
I just got a house for the kids.
Where?
In Philadelphia. And so you have to work. You have to be willing to really want it. This is Eddie's house is a hand up. It's not a handout. And it is not for everybody. This is not the system. You got to come in here and you got to want it. And we got a bunch of kids now, and they're not as easy as me to get over on. So you got to get past Tierra and everybody else.
Kids get involved in management
of
the house,
too. Yeah, well, we're a group, you know. We're a family, so that's how it goes. I mean, you come in and, you know, they can tell when somebody's trying to get over and when somebody just wants tokens. But it's, if you want to make it and you want to try and you want to do better in your life, we'd love to have you. Love to have you.
And how can we build about 10,000 more Eddie's houses?
We'll start here, and hopefully there'll be other people that have a big heart and love these kids. Look, once you meet them, like you met Tierra, you can't not love them.
Yeah, you're not kidding.
Exactly.
I don't care. I did fall in love with her, but I'm still taking you home. unfortunately, we have to say goodbye, and I am so sorry. I would have loved to spend more time with you both and more time on this topic. Sharon McGinley is the founder of Eddie's House, a resource center in Philadelphia for young adults leaving the foster care system. Thank you, Sharon.
Thank you.
Tierra Parks has aged out of foster care. She's receiving support from Eddie's House as she prepares to go to college. Tierra, thank you so much.
Thank you.
It was such a joy getting to know you. Earlier, we heard from Irene Clements, president of the National Foster Parent Association, and Representative Phyllis Mundy, representative from Luzerne County. Next week on Voices in the Family, we're going to be talking about hunger in our backyard. Well, you can reach us at whyy.org. You can reach me at drdangottlieb.com, and you can read more about my new blogging on the Huffington Post webpage. Well, the engineer for today's show has been Kevin Griffin. Elizabeth Perez-Luna is the executive producer. Mike and Scott's our executive producer. Jennifer Lynn is our producer. Maggie Zahn and Stephanie Pena are our interns.